Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Football Garbage Time NFL Podcast Week 9 Review. My name is Mifune Wong. I'm the editor-in-chief at Football Garbage Time, and with me is Ryan Whitfield, senior staff writer from Football Garbage Time. How you doing, Ryan?
I'm doing pretty good. Doing better before, not you necessarily, but all those other fruity Cubs fans got to celebrate a championship last year.
Somehow I thought the Cubs might come up. So I can tell you that obviously, and if everybody who's listening to the show knows that I'm the big Cubs fan here. You're rooting for the Tribe to win. It was, I think we can say, an extraordinary World Series and one of the best Game 7s. No, result notwithstanding, one of the best Game 7s in the history of baseball. Obviously, I would have a slightly different feel for that, and I wouldn't be able to say that for several weeks if the Cubs had lost. But do you agree? I mean, basically all the drama was there, and honestly, into the eighth inning, you know, Rajai Davis almost had the Indians with their first World Series win in 68 years.
Yeah, it was an amazing final game. You know, Joe Maddon, the pompous, intellectual there, did everything he could to try to blow that game for you guys.
True.
But it was a lot of drama. It was great. It was a great game.
Well, I'll say this. You know, can you, and being a, I assume that you are at least partial to the Red Sox. David Ross going out like that, that's something amazing, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, there was Red Sox storylines all over the board. Both sides had pieces from multiple different championship teams in Boston. So it was definitely made it more interesting for us here in Boston.
And the fact that I didn't realize this, but David Ross used to catch for Andrew Miller when he was in Boston, so he was actually used to reading pitches from him, and that might have, who knows, might have played in a little bit with his home run, his solo home run in the World Series, which is another just interesting side storyline. I guess the way we look at this is there's just no way to get away from Boston because they're just involved with everything in sports nowadays.
Yeah, even when they messed it up and let all those guys go.
Even if they, that's right, that's true. Although we had to pay a pretty penny to get Theo over, so, you know, there's that. All right, so without further ado, let's get started with the games. So let's start with the Jacksonville Jaguars at the Kansas City Chiefs, something that I thought was going to be a little bit of a blowout, but ended up being a much closer game than expected. The Chiefs did end up winning 19-14, but I think the big storyline here is, A, the Jacksonville Jaguars and Travis Kelce and his ejection. As some of our listeners may or may not know, Travis Kelce was was complaining about no call in the back of the end zone where he thought he was where he thought he might have been interfered with in catching a pass. He was penalized for his unsportsmanlike conduct at the when he was protesting the no call, and then took his towel that was tucked into his pants and threw it at the official. So he was disqualified, ejected, and the Chiefs received a second 15-yard penalty on top of that. Now, immediately after the game, Kelce said that he felt like an idiot. He can't do that to his teammates. He can't do that to the fans, to himself, and it was a terrible decision. But later on, way after the game was over, during a media session, he then went back on it and said, I can't throw my flag at the ref, but he can throw his all day long, almost as if he was mocking the ref. It's interesting. He's gone back and forth on this. What are your thoughts on the Travis Kelce ejection?
Yeah, I think he's an absolute moron.
okay.
I felt that for a while. I think he's the stereotypical meathead in the NFL. I don't think there's a lot between his ears. I think he has an inflated self image. One moment in particular that sticks in my craw that I don't know that a lot of people paid attention to last year, but when Brady comes out of the tunnel, he runs to the far end zone. And as they have the Jay-Z song playing and he gets to the end zone, he does a scream and he screams, let's go, into the crowd, and everyone in the corner goes nuts. That has been his pregame for as long as I can remember. And Travis Kelce proceeded in that playoff game last year to mock Tom Brady as he did that. And then proceeded to, he had one or two catches in that game and didn't show up, and his team was outmatched because the Chiefs will always be outmatched in the AFC when it comes to the Patriots. So, you know, that moment, coupled with what he did yesterday, you know, really just proves to me that this is a guy who just, like, I don't know if it's an arrogance or if he just thinks he's better than he is, or you know, just something about him that I don't think that he's exactly a winner. He just kind of has that loser mentality. With that said, it was absolutely a pass interference. I mean, he got hooked and turned on a play to the back of the end zone. It's just absolutely egregious. The refs missed it. But and in all of it, it's not the refs or Kelsey that were the biggest goats, the biggest donkeys in this. There was about three or four Jacksonville Jaguar players who were laughing in an exaggerated way, like falling over laughing, mocking him as he's ejected, pretending to throw their flags at him. And to them, I say, you're 2-6. What are you doing? You're losing. Is the fourth quarter sucks like it does every year. You live in a horrible state in a horrible town, and you're gonna sit here and mock somebody right now. It is my biggest gripe with the NFL. It's the I think before we started doing our podcast, the Bears player there a couple years ago who sacked Brady at the end of the game down by 40, and he leapt into the air and then blew out his ACL. You know, that stuff I have no tolerance for, the celebrating when you're getting your butt blown out. And, you know, for him to be mocking Travis Kelce when they're, you know, I guess at the time they're 2-5 and the Kansas City's 5-2, it's just absolutely egregious to me. And it's everything that's wrong with bad teams in the NFL.
Yeah, no, I agree of all that except for the fact that Florida is a terrible state. I will agree that Jacksonville is a not great city, but I'll agree with all the rest of that. I mean, they shouldn't be mocking him. They shouldn't be laughing. That was actually probably more unsportsmanlike than complaining about the call or complaining about the no call, because it was pretty egregious in the back of the end zone. It should have been a pass interference. But either way, you know, we have people arguing with refs all the time, and we know there are blown calls all the time, and you got to be a professional about it. You got to know when you got to shut that down. And you're right, Travis Kelce, you know, he went a little bit too far. Now, throwing the towel at the ref, that is just losing it, you know. In my opinion, that doesn't make any sense at all. Because what did he think was going to happen from that act? Did he think that they're going to turn around and say, oh, now you're throwing it at me, I feel bad for you, I should reverse that call? It's, you know, the only viable thing that he left, the only option he left the refs to do was to eject him. Which, there you go. But his after game response to this is just out of control. He's almost schizophrenic about it. I don't really know what to say. All I can say is that he's the perfect subject for a reality TV show, which is why, which I've never seen before, but I know he's the star of his own reality TV show, Catching Kelce. He's the perfect person for that, because like you said, he's a little bit of a meathead, and he's probably not the brightest bulb in the shed either. So, anything else you want to talk about with the Chiefs and the Jaguars? I mean, close win for the Chiefs. They keep their record up. Jacksonville basically is done. There's nothing they can do, I think, to salvage their season except for fire everybody and find a new quarterback. Anything else you want to talk about with regard to the Jaguars or the Chiefs?
Yeah, I saw a stat that since I don't know, I think it was week 8 or week 9 last year, something like that, whenever they started their big win streak last year, that no team has won more games than the Chiefs over the last 12 or 13 games. So I know a lot of people are buying into the Chiefs again, but I would just remind you again that they have played well in the regular season at the end of last year and the beginning of this year, but the one game that mattered, they went up against a Patriot team with Gronkowski not at 100% and Edelman not at 100%, and they were never really in that game. So I am not buying in on the Chiefs, no matter how many regular season games they win.
All right, so let's go ahead and move on to the next game on our list today, and that is the Detroit Lions at the Minnesota Vikings. This one going to overtime with a last second 58-yard field goal by Matt Prater from the Lions, bringing them to 16-16 overtime. Detroit Lions drive it down, win it. With a touchdown on the first drive, miraculous catch and dive by Golden Tate. So let's talk about this. Any thoughts about the Minnesota Vikings defense and how they're going south? They obviously this or last week, and we have the Lions now kind of stepping up in NFC North. So tell me, what are your thoughts about the game?
Yeah, I think you know, I obviously they're on a backslide, the Vikings defense, but I wouldn't be worried about it. They're still loaded with talent, and you know, definitely concerned they've gone from 5-0 to 5-3. But I think what happened at the end of this game is a classic example of why myself and so many people, and it's one of those things that you hear the argument all the time from you know, the actual people who do X's and O's and who are coaching teams and stuff, say, well, you don't know football, you're not there. But I, the amount of times I see a team blow a game because they're playing prevent defense, it's maddening watching the game. I can't understand the logic, and I don't have, you know, I'm not a sabermetrician, I don't have the stats in front of me to back it up, but I'd be willing to bet the amount of times that when you go into that prevent that the team gets as many yards as they need to versus the amount of times that when you're playing stand-up D, you get torched over the top for a big play. It's got to be in the favor of playing your defense. There's 30 seconds left in that game. I don't know how you do anything. Or I don't understand why you go into the prevent defense, because you open up the middle of the field and you open up and allow that play to happen. And right. I think the chances, again, it was a low-scoring game. What are the chances that the Lions were going to connect over the top for a 40-yard pass if you just played man coverage and come down on them? More likely than not, they're gonna complete a pass or two for 10 yards instead of that one pass for 30. I don't agree with prevent defense. It drives me nuts when I see it. And they paid the ultimate price for it. With that said, what an absolute beast Matt Prater is. You know, we've heard – I think the only thing I disrespect more than running backs on this podcast is kickers and how weak-minded they are. So, you know, I'll give credit to one of the few guys I think is nails. And, I mean, that kick would have been good from 67, 68 yards. That was a bomb and just right down the middle. And, you know, the NFC North is still up for grabs. You know, it looked like it was going to be a runaway. And the Lions are making some noise now. I mean, hell, the Bears still have a shot, you know, against all odds right now.
Yeah, I hear that. So this is for Matt Prater. Yeah, you're right. And now, but let's give a little bit of credit to Matt Stafford actually getting the ball down there. They got it down there very fast, very little time. I have not been a fan of Matt Stafford this year or any other year, but that particular sequence I thought could not have been done any better. Any thoughts on that and Matt Stafford?
Yeah, I think he's having a good year so far. You know, I think him and Jim Bob there have had some good chemistry
Jim
together.
Bob Cooter, my favorite coach name.
best coach name in the league. But I think they've worked well together this year. You know, Marvin Jones, I didn't buy in on. I thought he was a system guy, benefited from being the number two to AJ Green. But I think he's actually proved to be a pretty good receiver this year, and he's been a nice weapon for them. And Tate's having had a big day yesterday. But I like the way that Stafford looked this year.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think he's actually, and like I said, I've never been a Matt Stafford fan. I've been just the opposite of that. But you know, frankly, I thought that his recent play has really kind of elevated his team. They would not be able to do what they do without him at this point. You know, he's basically the guy there, because I can't really – I mean, I would love to say it was Golden Tate, but he has not been 100% consistent. He's been good recently, but not at the beginning. And then Marvin Jones was amazing for the first three games of the season, but then kind of let it tail off. But I do have to say that I am impressed with what the Detroit Lions are doing over there. Okay, let's move on. Our next storyline here, Carolina Panthers at the Los Angeles Rams, a narrow victory by the Carolina Panthers, 13-10, maybe salvaging their season. Not a really impressive effort by anyone. Cam Newton going very conservative in this game, 225 yards and one touchdown, barely even runs. In fact, almost no one does anything on either team. And I'd like to really zone in on Todd Gurley. 12 carries for 48 yards. Really nothing else. 4 catches, 26 yards. He's not been a factor this year. He has not been anything like he was last year. So tell me, what are your thoughts? Panthers at Rams. What do you think about Todd Gurley? Is he done? What do you think about the Panthers? Have they been able to salvage their season?
Yeah, I'm not buying on the Panthers salvaging their season just yet. You know, I'm still waiting for the second half choke job from Matty Ice, but until that happens and until the Saints cool off, you know, I don't think that they're going to catch a wild card. So their best option is for that division to finish or win, be one at 9-7. But as far as Gurley, you know, I don't get to see a lot of LA games here. Fortunate for me,
right?
But But, you know, I did get to watch a decent amount, being one of the only, you know, one of the only games on Red Zone in the afternoon yesterday. I don't know that it's so much him as it is that your quarterback's Casey Keenum. Tavon Austin has seemed to take a real step back this year. And the rest of the receiving core and tight ends there are just nothing to write home about. So I think when you're game planning, against the Rams, what are you game planning against except for Todd Gurley? You know, and I know people can say, well, they did that last year, but last year there also wasn't a lot of tape on him. You know, he'd been, injured a lot in college. You hadn't seen him a lot. And I know it's a running back, so there's only so much they do, but, you know, it was just kind of like he came in midway through the season, kind of burst on the scene. So I think he had some advantages last year. And now that there's some tape on him out there and he's the only weapon to really concentrate on, it's hard for him to be that productive. So, I'm not overly confident in the Rams definitely don't have one of the best offensive lines in football. It's not the Seattle Seahawks offensive line, but it's also not the Cowboys, you know, offensive line. So, I don't think it's a Gurley issue. I think it's an offensive issue. And, you know, that genius there, Jeff Fisher, just continues to take the guy who they went and selected number one overall and stick him on the bench while playing Casey Keenum on his way to another 500 season.
Right. So Jeff Fisher apparently has mentioned, not in so many words, that Jared Goff will not be seeing the field in the regular season until the Rams are eliminated from the playoffs, which in some ways might mean we might see him in about 2 weeks. But what do you think about that? Do you think he's simply trying to prevent Jared Goff from getting batted around in a bad offense, losing confidence, losing face, let Case Keenum take the brunt of it? Or do you think he really thinks that Case Keenum is the best quarterback for his team?
Yeah, I just think he's an old-school coach who's let the game pass him by. You know, that's always been my opinion on Jeff Fisher, is that he's an old-school coach. You know, the iron fist and the yelling and the temperament and the, you know, run on first and second down to set up a play action pass or short passes on third down. And I think that he just coaches in a conservative, you know, game plan that would work 20 years ago that doesn't work in the modern NFL. And I think that we've seen over the last couple years the value of starting kids right away. If you have a situation like Aaron Rodgers and Brett Favre, or Brady and Garoppolo, where you can afford to sit your guy 3 or 4 years to get him in the system and teach him, you do that. But Carson Wentz started right away. Marcus Mariota started right away. Jameis Winston started right away. Cam Newton started. I mean, up and down, this is how the NFL is now. If you draft the guy in the top 10 at quarterback, you start him. And no questions about it. Yet the only idiot in the entire league that won't do it is Mr. 500 himself, Mr. 20 years of head coaching and 11 playoff games. I could rant about Jeff Fisher until midnight. I think he is the most overrated, one of the worst coaches in the NFL, and he walks around demanding respect and yelling at his players all the time. And I would look at him, and I'm sure a lot of people on that team do, and they look at him and they go, "Who the hell are you to demand respect? What have you proven in this league? What have you done that's worked?" So I think
totally agree
with
all
the dissension over it too.
Yeah, well, I totally agree with all that. But let me ask you: so you don't subscribe to the Aaron Rodgers, approach? You know, let him sit behind a guy. I know Case Keenum's not—he's not Brett Favre, but protect the guy for a couple of years, let him learn, let him get up to speed, and then put him in.
I think if you're taking a guy later, if you're again as much as Aaron Rodgers had some raw ability, you know, he was overpassed a lot in that draft, and I think that the Packers kind of took him as like a project in mind. I think there's value to that if you're looking to pass the torch. You know, again, what they're doing with Brady right now, even if it ends up being Brissett, because Brady apparently is going to play to his 50. You know, but what they did with Favre and Rodgers there. But when you're starting quarterbacks Casey Keenum, no, let the kid go out there and take his lumps. You know, again, the Tennessee Titans didn't say, "Oh, no, we gotta protect him and keep playing Zach Mettenberg." They said, "No, we took this kid. We went out and took this kid. Let's get him out there and let's see what we can do."
And he's shaping up really nicely. So speaking of which, let's turn to our next game. Whoops. We're not turning. That was supposed to be this. That was not a comment on your analysis there, Ryan. We'll save that one for when you talk about the Patriots next. Let's go to the next game, which is the Colts and the Packers. The Packers look lifeless through half the game. We're down 28-10 at the midpoint. Managed to crawl back in the fourth quarter, lose 31-26 to the Colts. Aaron Rodgers puts on a show, but almost entirely in the third and fourth quarter. And Andrew Luck looked really shaky, but managed to carry his team to another win. So the question is, Andrew Luck versus Aaron Rodgers, what do you think going forward? Would you take either of those guys to be the cornerstone of your franchise?
Yeah, I don't blame either guy. I think both teams are poorly constructed, and I think both coaches are idiots. I think McCarthy has a little more value because he's a great offensive mind, but he can't coach a team. And it's just, you know, it's nothing like we always talk about this. I'll give you guys a little window into what we do up here in New England. Monday sports talk on the Patriots bye week is always entertaining because you get all the people around here calling in to talk about how awful it is when the Patriots are on a bye week, because we get to actually sit back for an entire day and see how bad the rest of your teams are. It is mind blowing. God, was this game
making friends and influencing people as usual.
Just, oh my God, if I had to watch some of your teams 16 weeks a year, I think I'd stop watching football. It's so bad. So I don't blame either. I don't put this on either quarterback, really. Everyone say what's wrong with Aaron Rodgers. It's the rest of the team sucks. Like, he really has nothing out there. Randall Cobb hasn't been good for 2 years, like really good. Devontae Adams is extremely frustrating, flashy at times, but inconsistent player. And then, I'm sorry, all the reports in the preseason was Jordy was looking as good as ever. He was going to be right back on pace. He can't beat anybody anymore. Rodgers tries to go to him deep, and every single time the defensive back's foot in foot with him. And then he wasn't playing against the 2010 Jets secondary. He's playing against the Colts. Darius Butler is a starting corner in Indianapolis. I'm sorry, Jordy Nelson should be getting open, but he doesn't. And, you know, there was an interesting stat this morning. Tim Hasselbeck was on a local radio station this morning, and he was saying that when he went through and broke down the game film, that he had it graded out as 70% of the Packers' plays this weekend were breakdown plays, meaning Aaron Rodgers isn't being able to find a hot read and go to somebody off the snap. It's not the natural progression. 70% of their offensive passing plays right now are him having to hold onto the ball, scramble around for his life, and try to make a magic play, which when he does, it's spectacular. And for fantasy players, it's all great. Look at that. That was a huge play. But it's not an efficient way to run an offense, and it's not what he does when his offense is good. He has that ability to do it, but when you're doing it 70% of the time, when you're trying to make something out of nothing, that's not a recipe for success. And again, you've heard me rail on this before. I don't put a big emphasis on the run game, but you need to have some kind of a run game. And Ty Montgomery back there, I mean, you can roll out nickel and dime packages all day long. And you know, when you got three guys who can't get open and you have that many DBs back there, I don't know what you expect from them. So I think both teams are just flawed up and down, and both teams are only where they're at and only as competitive as they are because of those two guys behind the center.
Right. All right. So I can buy on to all that. I think that's all legitimate points there. So in the interest of getting to our last segment, let me just quickly move on to the last game that we want to talk about here. And that is the Philadelphia Eagles at the New York Giants. The Giants managed to pull this out 20-23. It looked like they were going to run away with it at the beginning of the game as they intercepted Wentz twice and then managed to stop them on fourth down twice. And then the Eagles caught up. So you tell me, Giants really bad, Eagles really good. It's kind of up in the air now. Aside from the Cowboys in that division, I don't know who's going to be second. Not that it really matters, because they probably are unlikely to get a record to get in the wild card anyway. But what are your thoughts? Are the Eagles basically done now, 4-4? Have the Giants turned the corner?
I'm buying on the Giants. I know I'm Mr. Negative a lot of time on this show, but I think they have turned a corner, and I think it's because of that defense. You know, we all knew that their offense was going to have some big play capabilities, and that they had enough talent on the offensive side. But their defense has looked much better. Specifically and easily to identify, Landon Collins has been a beast since their game in London.
So
I'm buying on them. The Eagles, I think, are a good team. I know they're having a couple bad weeks here. I still think they're a year or two away. And so if I'm an Eagles fan, I'm being patient, but I'm hopeful about the future. They got to get some new receivers, though, because that was a gorgeous throw by Carson Wentz there on fourth down at the end of that game. And Jordan Matthews, mm-hmm. just, of course, you know, because it's a clutch moment, Jordan Matthews has alligator hands. So they got to upgrade the wide receiver position and, you know, find some guys who aren't carrying around drugs and, you know, sawed off pump guns. But they if they can fix that, they'll be good in the future. But quickly, I'm starting to worry. I know there's a lot of good teams out there, but a lot of bad memories for me in seeing the Giants get on a roll here towards the second half.
You're
of the
right,
year.
Late in the season. As a Patriots fan, I'm sure you don't like that.
I do not want to see them in February. That's for sure.
Well, the Eagles fans. Funny thing that you said there was Eagles fans be patient. I've never seen any Eagles fan patient for anything ever, except. Maybe a Philly cheesesteak, you know, on a day where they're not too hungry. But honestly, they are not patient people. I have a friend who is a big Eagles fan. This did not go over well with him. They threw the Eagles over the side of the railing 2 weeks ago when they had lost two games. So you can imagine where they are right now. Okay, well, that takes us to the end of the games that we'll be talking about today. Let's get to our final segment of the day, which is our too legit to quit or can't touch this segment. We're going to talk about a couple players, a couple teams, and we're going to get some insight from Ryan about what he thinks. So, Ryan, tell me, first of all, Dewan Harris of the 49ers taking over Carlos Hyde puts on a monster performance in the first half of the game, ends up doing relatively well for himself. Too legit to quit or can't touch this?
Yeah, I'm going can't touch this. Too early to tell on him. It was a nice half of football, but I'm not buying him yet.
Okay. And now, because we're talking about the Eagles, something that we've talked about a couple times now, Carson Wentz kind of going in the tank a little bit. Really rough start to last game. Two interceptions. Can't get past the two fourth down conversions. Carson Wentz this year, too legit to quit. Can't touch this.
So going too legit to quit. He's a rookie. He's going to have ups and downs. But like I said, a guy who can make a throw like that throw he made on fourth down at the end of the game yesterday, I have to buy him.
Okay. All right. Now we've now heard that the Eagles have finally admitted that Darren Sproles is their lead running back, not Ryan Matthews. I know it might not make a huge difference, but what do you think here? Darren Sproles at a lead RB position, too legit to quit or can't touch this?
Not now when he's 45 and not you know, 15 years ago when he was 30. That can't be your every down back, and that's definitely an issue in Philly right now.
Okay, and do you think Ryan Matthews is going to overtake that, or are they going to go to Wendell Smallwood?
I think they need to start planning for 2017 at that position.
Yep, that's what I think too. All right, next, Nick Foles, another relatively good day for the Chiefs in relief of Alex Smith. What do you think, too legit to quit or can't touch this?
Yeah, I'm going to play it down the middle. I mean, it depends. If you're looking to win the Super Bowl, can't touch this. If you're looking, you know, if you're one of those teams that don't have a real quarterback, this is a guy who can come in and play reasonably well for you. I know he went sour at the end of Philadelphia, but he also had that bum Chip Kelly coaching him, so.
Mm-hmm. All right. So let's move on to our last one, which is Cordarrelle Patterson. He was nominated for Pepsi's Next Rookie of the Year in 2014. He's only 25 years old, pretty much left for dead. Up until now, he's getting very involved behind, near the line of scrimmage, and on the return and special team. Cordarrelle Patterson and the Minnesota Vikings, too legit to quit or can't touch this?
Can't touch this. I'm not buying back in on him yet. I was big on him back in 2014, but it's been, you know, a year and a couple games here of bad play. So we'll see how I feel at the end of the year. But right now, I'm going to touch this.
Okay, all right. Well, that takes us to the end of our segment for this week and the end of our podcast. So tell us, Ryan, what's your Twitter account so people can follow you?
Yep, at Ryan Whitfield NE.
Great, and you can follow me at FB Garbage Time. Enjoy Monday Night Football coming up real soon, and of course the rest of your football week, and we will catch you hopefully soon. We're going to be going to 2 weeks. You'll be able to catch us for reviews and previews of the following week, so keep it tuned in, keep it dialed in, keep us on your iTunes list, and we will see you next week.